is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host JM, and with me as always is Nick.
Hey.
We have a Petri's review today, so thank you to Cam and the folks at Petri's Family Games for supplying us with the Fantasy Flight Star Wars Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion books. So we're going to be talking about that system and that setting and the product lines. And seeing as we're more 13th Age guys, we have a special guest today. One of the gentlemen from our gaming group, Calvin, is here. Thanks for coming on the show, Calvin.
Oh, you bet.
The reason we brought Calvin on is because he is a big nerd about this game and enjoys the setting, enjoys the rule set, has most of the products, I think.
Got the base books for Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion, but just collecting the Age supplements.
Okay. You've run some sessions of Age at this point, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, Edge.
Edge? Okay.
Now, when you say that he's a nerd of this game, are you referring to just the Fantasy Flight game stuff, or is it just Star Wars in general?
Yes.
It's like, well, let's get into that. So, Calvin, how did you get into gaming?
Well, my family's always been a big game family, more board games and things of that nature. In high school, I got my first copy of Ninjas and Super Spies.
Oh, yeah.
And really enjoyed that, but really didn't get a whole lot of a chance to play. Played some D6 Star Wars in college, and then, in 2004 when we moved out to Colorado, really when my regular gaming started, thanks to JM. And
he is very good at corrupting people.
I have that effect on people.
Yes. And, yeah, pretty much since then, been a part of a weekly game and, you know, myriads of different systems at this point, but
cool. And you're also a big Shadowrun fan, correct?
Oh yes, very much so.
So, what are you currently playing, or running for that matter?
So, I'm not actually currently playing anything. I'm running Dresden Files once a week right now. That's about it these days. Hoping to start up an Age game actually with my kids and some of their friends starting in June.
Oh, very cool.
That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that towards the end and kind of see how you feel or what are your thoughts on this system for kids. What are your favorite games that you have played right up until now?
Well, so Age of Rebellion is actually probably at the top of the list. It's my favorite system to run, and I would love to get a chance to play in it. Shadowrun, always near the top.
That's fair.
Since second edition, I've got myriads of books. Crossing editions, and have run multiple games of that, and enjoy playing that as well. But pretty much, I'm pretty easy when it comes to what I enjoy gaming-wise. I'll play pretty much anything.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you again for being on the show.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, so we are going to be talking specifically about Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion on this show. These are books by Fantasy Flight Games. The main system and the Edge book, I believe, were the main designer was Jay Little.
Yeah,
and
for
they,
Edge. Yeah,
yeah, the and they designer. Designed they designed the system with all three games, Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, and the upcoming Force and Destiny in mind. Jay kind of took his Warhammer 3rd edition mechanics and brought it into the Star Wars universe. Just so you guys know, Nick has read through Edge of the Empire. I've read through Age of Rebellion, and Calvin has read through both. So that's kind of where your comments are going to be coming from on this show. What are the tone differences between Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion? Because they both take place in the Star Wars universe, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, with Edge of the Empire, they were shooting for the Fringer, the outcast smuggler style. The classes in there focus more on what you would find like in the Outer Rim. Really, what Fantasy Flight talked about, their design goals were each book would roughly correspond to the original trilogy. So the people that you meet in the, you know, episode 4, it's a lot of, you know, Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, but really before anything, Force comes into it. And so you bounty hunters and just that type of character. That's really your focus with Edge. It's dealing with the outcasts and the criminal societies.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's a little bit in there where you may want to help the Rebellion. You may not want to help the Rebellion. You may want to help the Empire, depending on what's going to serve your best interests in the moment as you're trying to run different smuggling runs or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard Edge is very Firefly-like.
Yes, that's a good...
Like from a feel.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw it as kind of, if you're trying to keep it within the Star Wars mentality, it's what Han Solo did before we were introduced to him as a character.
Okay.
I mean, there's obviously a very large backstory of how he met Chewbacca, how he got the Millennium Falcon, all of that sort of stuff. It's a question mark. What did he do? Well, you as a player, if you go through Edge of the Empire, you can kind of figure out, what sort of things might he have encountered that led him to that point where he shot first.
Okay. Yeah, Iconic is taking a stand and Han shot first. I think we can all agree with that.
Yes.
Okay. So what about age, Calvin? Tell us a little bit about age.
Age, so again with the movie delineation is really focused on the Rebellion. And this is all of the classes in the age book are military. You are a member of the military. And while some of the specializations might be the same as some of the specializations you can see in the Edge book, they fall under a very different umbrella. And so in this, you are working with the Rebellion. You are, you have a duty to do. You are working to, defeat the Empire.
Okay.
And so it's a different feel.
Well, and then I assume with the third one coming out, being more Jedi and Force-focused, we're going to be seeing more Return of the Jedi-style gaming than...
Yeah, Force and Destiny's all Force users.
Okay.
And while each of the previous books does touch on the Force a little bit, they each have a specialization that anybody can buy into that gives them access to some limited Force use. It's nothing like what will be seen in Force and Destiny.
Cool.
So does we mentioned maybe that the books seem to follow the movies,
mm-hmm.
And I definitely saw a lot of Episode 4 in Edge of the Empire. The timeline for Age of Rebellion, was that align with Episode 5?
So the timeline for the books is actually post Death Star,
right?
Even for Edge.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
So yeah. While the the focuses are correspond to the movies, the timeline is, the Rebellion is a force to be reckoned with. They are out there. And so, if you're out there smuggling, you're not just dealing with the Empire as someone who you might be working against, but the Rebellion is actually there and in force.
Very cool.
Now, one of the thoughts that I had rolling around in the back of my head, because I didn't realize that they were trying to align them with the movies, is that I wondered if each of the books was to try to encapsulate the three main characters of the original Star Wars, Han Solo, Luke, and Leia. Han Solo obviously being Edge of the Empire, Leia being Age of Rebellion, and then Luke being Force and Destiny. Does that seem like an accurate observation?
Certainly reasonable, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not something I've ever heard the Fantasy Flight guys say in interviews or anything, but it certainly fits where we see those characters go.
Hmm. Cool. That's cool. All right. So I know, and you kind of mentioned this a bit, that you've played West End game Star Wars. We've also played together in games that Chris has run of Revised and Saga Edition.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this version different or unique or I hesitate to say better because
sure.
all editions are different.
Right. For me, what this edition does better than the other editions, and I think through its mechanics, is it really attempts to capture the cinematic feel of the movies.
Mm.
That is one of their stated design goals, is they really want this to be cinematic action, down to encouraging the use of screen wipes by the GM to advance the story plot, starting in media res, just all of the different things that they put in are designed to allow your characters to feel like they're actually a part of the movies.
Okay.
And doing things that you would see characters in the movies do. A lot of their examples on, how you would adjudicate a dice roll, for example, would they go back to, let's use this example from the movie. And I think they've done a really good job of capturing that.
So I've played all the editions except for this latest one of Star Wars. And that is one thing that always kind of felt missing, especially when you look at like the D20 versions of the games.
Right. Yeah.
So that seems to be a very good segue into our next topic, which is let's talk about the mechanics of Star Wars. How do they work?
Well, I think the biggest factor that's different about Star Wars in comparison to a lot of the other games is they do have their own custom dice. And the best way I can think of describing them is instead of it just being a pass-fail dice roll, it's actually a narrative roll. And depending on what you roll on the dice, it affects the story in greater extent than I climbed over the wall, you know, sort of deal. There, you can use standard dice, but the conversion is a little bit finicky, and there are charts available for to walk you through that. Fantasy Flight Games
don't use standard dice.
Yeah, it's really rough.
No, let's be honest. Jay Little was at Starfest, and what he told me with both Warhammer and Star Wars is anybody who is complaining about dice has obviously not met a gamer. Because we love buying dice as gamers, and a lot of us buy dice specifically for new games that we're playing. So, yeah.
And if you don't want to buy the dice, there are apps available. I think they're about $5 each for iOS and Android. There's some online rollers that are free. But essentially, you have two different types of dice. You've got your positive aspect of dice, and you've got your negative aspect of dice, and they balance each other out, whether it's a boost or a setback, an ability or difficulty, proficiency, challenge. And those are set based on the difficulty of the situation, the skill of the opponent, any conditions that are surrounding you, you know, whether it's a smoky room or not. You and the GM kind of go back and forth in regards to what sort of dice pool am I going to create here? And then you roll the dice, and if the positives outweigh the negatives, then you've succeeded, or vice versa.
Well, I mean, that's not... I mean, you can succeed, but still have negative dice. Certain types of negative dice overwhelm the positives, and so you succeed with a negative outcome.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note as well that you don't roll against somebody. One person does the entire roll. They roll both the positive and the negative dice together. And so, you know, it's not the player rolling the positive dice and the GM rolling the negative dice or vice versa on a, you know, a GM-initiated attack. But one person picks up the entire dice pool, rolls it, and it's kind of nice in that way. It cuts down on the number of people having to grab at dice and...
Well, one thing I saw Chris do at Starfest, because I watched – Chris and I were running games at the same time, so I was running Cypher, and I was able to observe Christopher running a lot of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. He did a great job of, if Nick were rolling, still getting everyone at the table involved in that role. So if I'm helping – if I'm boosting Nick up, I contribute a die to that pool. And so, while one person's rolling, the whole table can be involved in that single roll.
And in the interpreting of it as well. Because like you said, whether you pass or fail, there's also going to be the narrative aspects of it. Because even if you, like you said, even if you pass, there could be negative aspects to what happened around that. You succeeded at blowing the lock off the door. Well, that also means that the walkway cannot expand, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so everyone at the table can kind of pitch in and say, oh, what about this? And you can really work together on crafting that story.
Yeah. And one interesting thing is also that criticals, both positive and negative, while rolling the triumph or the despair, does contribute one success to your pool for purposes of canceling things out. You can critically succeed, you can have a critical success and still not succeed. So something really good can happen and you still failed your roll.
Oh, interesting.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. Or something really bad can happen when you do succeed.
So who has the final say over how the dice are interpreted?
Final say is always the GM.
Okay.
Now, assuming that a player is rolling, the player for advantage, which is the non-success axis good role for advantage and for triumph. They're critical. The player is encouraged to say, this is what I would like to happen. And then the GM looks at it and says, okay, well, you only rolled one advantage. That's a bit much. Or, sure, you rolled four advantage. That is totally within the limits of what it would be, with the rule of thumb being, if it's cinematic,
go with it.
Edge towards letting it happen.
Okay. Now, one thing, we played a lot of Warhammer 3rd Edition, which has some similarities between the mechanics, because you had the narrative dice pool in Warhammer. I discovered, and it could have just been our group, that after about a month of play, the narrative blush kind of wore off the dice systems, and people were just picking through real quick to see, okay, these cancel each other out, this cancels each other. All right, I got this many successes, this many advantages. Here's how I'm spending them on to the next turn. Did they do anything to kind of address that in the new edition?
Not specifically. I mean, there's no hard and fast, rules to do that. Again, you know, fall back on the cinematic. Okay, encourage players to think outside of just basic uses for advantage and critical successes. To do things that you would see in the movies.
Okay,
and so it could easily turn into that if that's what your player, the way that the players went, but I feel like, at least in the Star Wars games that I have played in, even not the Fantasy Flight system, that just part of Star Wars is players want to be cinematic.
Right. No, I would agree with that.
And so I think that will play into keeping that at bay.
Okay.
And I think you're going to run into that difficulty regardless of what game you're playing. I mean, that's just, a tabletop dynamic. Whether or not you start getting away from describing your actions or just saying, this is what I do, and I succeeded for this much damage, versus actually narrating it out. I think that regardless of which system it is that you're playing, if you start seeing your players doing that, put it back on them. Well,
that's a good point.
This is what happened. Well, tell me why. How did that happen? And really just kind of reinforce that the players need to be involved in telling the story.
That's a really good point. Okay, so one of the other mechanics that I really liked from the Fantasy Flight system is for edge, it is obligation, and for age, it is duty. So let's kind of discuss that. Do you want to start off the obligation?
Sure. So obligation is one of the core motivational pieces behind why your character is doing what it's doing. It could be a hook. It could be, like I said, a motivation. There is a mechanical aspect to it that the amount of obligation that you have will increase or decrease depending upon your actions. But it's essentially a little bit of your arm is being twisted for a reason. You owe someone a debt. You have a bounty on your head or something to that effect, where some part of your past, past decision, a past action, some part of your past is driving the actions that you are having today. And I think at the beginning of each session or every couple of sessions, you roll on the obligation table and then you determine whether or not that obligation comes into play that session. But if it does, you may be in the middle of a cantina trying to get some information out of someone, and a bounty hunter comes in because he's going to claim on the reward. And now you have the obligation to that hut or whoever that you have to deal with that you weren't expecting to have to deal with that session.
Now, one of the things, and you can tell me if I'm misremembering this, but is obligation as a group?
It's individual.
Okay,
it's,
but the total, if the total of the obligation reaches 100, then no one gets to spend XP until the obligation drops below 100.
That's correct, yes.
That's brutal.
Well, yeah. And if obligation gets triggered, everyone takes a certain amount of strain as well.
Okay.
Their strain threshold actually gets reduced.
Oh, is it the threshold?
Yes. Okay. So the amount of strain that they have available to them gets reduced for the entire session.
Because it's looming over
them. Right, because it's just looming over them mentally. Really, the way that they talk about this in the books is, this is Han Solo. Right.
Yeah.
This is Han Solo and having to deal with Jabba and having that price out on there. This is the thing that every bad thing that happens to Han in the first two movies is a direct result of this. He ends up in carbonite because he has this debt to Jabba. And that's the feel that they were trying to capture in this. Now, gaining obligation most often is done to give the players a benefit, a short-term benefit. I really need to get off of this rock, so I'm going to take a loan from local gangster. And okay, now I can get off of this rock and get to where I need to go to deliver this cargo. And oh no, my cargo got stolen, and now I don't have the money to pay him back. And so it's going to ebb and flow. They actually even recommend using obligation as how do people react to you? Where the higher obligation you have, the less well that moral upstanding people will react to you, but the better that criminals will react to you because they know who you are. You deal with them. The lower your obligation goes, the less well that the criminals will deal with you, and the better that the, you know, the upstanding citizens will. And so, you know, it can play into a lot of different things beyond just, okay, we triggered obligation this session, and that means that we're going to end up in a fight somehow this session.
Okay. Now, how does duty contrast that?
So duty is almost the inverse.
Okay.
Where obligation is, you know, you owe this person something, and it's probably not somebody you want to owe, and it negatively affects everything you do. Duty is each character in Age of Rebellion has a duty that drives them, something that they are especially skilled towards, or that this is the way that they contribute to the rebellion. And the more that they do that, the more they get recognized by the rebellion. And as opposed to obligation, where when your group total hits 100, nobody can spend XP until it drops back down. With duty, when your total hits 100, you get something good from the rebellion. You get some boon, and you go up a rank, and you keep track of total duty and ranks. And you know, the higher rank you get, you will get better benefits as a result of it, because you are better known by the rebellion and maybe by the Empire. And you know, you're becoming more high profile in the rebellion, and so you have the visibility both internally and externally, and the good and the bad that comes with that.
Now, you, when we set up the outline, you specifically wanted to talk about destiny points because it's your favorite mechanic. So why don't you talk about destiny points?
Okay, destiny points. It is my favorite mechanic. At the beginning of each session, each player rolls the force die. Force die is a d12 with white and black pips on it of varying numbers. And for every white pip that you roll, you get a light side destiny point. For every black pip you roll, you get a dark side destiny point. And that makes up your destiny pool for the session.
Okay.
At any point in time, a player can spend a destiny point by flipping it. It's a zero-sum game. There will always, for that session, be the same number of destiny points. Whether they're light side or dark side depends on who uses them. When a GM uses one, he flips a dark side to a light side. When a player uses one, he flips a light side to a dark side. You can use it to upgrade a check, which is better than just getting a boost die, which you might get when somebody helps, because an upgrade gives you the chance to roll a critical success.
Okay.
You can spend one for narrative things. The examples that they give in the rule book is, okay, I'm here. I would have brought a hydro spanner with me. Okay, we'll spend the destiny point, and you did.
Okay.
You know, those things that, it would be really nice if I had remembered this earlier in the game. Well, would you like to rewrite history? For something small.
Right.
And because it's a zero-sum game, this is a commodity that should be going back and forth frequently. And so the GMs should be spending it to, you know what, I want to make this check even more stressful for you, so I'm going to upgrade the difficulty so now you have the chance of rolling a critical failure.
Okay.
And it can really introduce just a lot of fun narrative elements into the game.
If you use them.
If you use them, right. And, you know, it is one of the things that they talk about, you know, really encourage your players to do this. And as the GM, the way you do it is by doing it yourself.
Right.
Spend them. as often as you can, get as many flipped to the light side as you can, because then they're available and they're like, oh, well, all right, yeah, I've got 4 destiny points. I'll flip one for this roll. And then they shift back and forth and lots of fun ensues.
Yeah, I played through the beginner box, and that was, in hindsight, that was the one thing that we didn't do well, was we essentially totally forgot about the destiny points for the majority of the session, or for the majority of the campaign. Each session we would roll for it, and then they'd sit there, and I don't think it was until the last session we actually played where they actually did start going back and forth, and it really added to the overall tension and dynamics of the story that we were crafting together.
Yeah, it's a really neat narrative economy that... if you don't use, you're missing out on a huge part of the game.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, seeing as this is Star Wars, I know Force and Destiny is coming out this summer, but there has to be some sort of Force mechanics in the game. How does that work for us?
So each of the core books that's currently out has a, they call them a universal specialization that any player can buy into, and that... when they buy into it, grants them a force rating of 1. And so that means that anytime they're trying to activate a force power, they roll 1 force die to see how much force is available to them. And then at that point, you have talents from that specialization that you can buy, as well as then specific powers. And each book has slightly different powers in it. So by the end of 2 books, you have 5 or 6 different powers that you can choose from, and, you know, move or sense, you know, those types of things. And they give your character access to a little bit of force. You know, you're going to be Luke running around trying to do things, jumping in ways that he might not normally be able to jump, but not Return of the Jedi Luke, who stands there and, you know, accepts that he's standing on the edge of a Sarlacc pit and, you know, is without fear because the Force is his ally. This is, you know, pre-training Luke.
Okay. And, really more lucky at, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
Like he might be able to lift a rock, but definitely not his X-Wing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not going to have the... with the low force ratings that you have, you're not going to have the power that you need to be able to power those things.
Okay.
And the two different specializations, they have the force-sensitive emergent and the force-sensitive exile to give two different feels to the characters. So you have one that's, you know, somebody who's been in hiding since, you know, Darth Vader and his minions have been killing every force user. So you have somebody who's in exile, almost a, you know, Ben Kenobi, but... without the power behind it, or force-sensitive emergent, someone who just figured out that they could use the force. Luke in the first movie, Leia, you know, those types of people who have a little bit of force. They don't really know what they're doing, but they're just figuring it out and things like that.
Cool. So let's talk about our likes. Nick, what did you like about the new Star Wars products?
Well, the first thing that stood out to me was just the gorgeous art. I mean, the vast majority of every single page has some type of art on it. There's maybe a handful of open pages that don't have any art at all. It's just text and tables. And it's all very evocative, very inspirational. As I'm looking at these things, like, I can see myself doing that, or that's what I want my character to do, and that sort of thing. All of it was... I mean, even down to like the starships and the planets and that sort of thing, it was all very, very well done. I think that text aside, that was probably one of the best aspects of the books that I saw.
Yeah, I really think these are the best looking Star Wars books that we've ever had.
Oh, agreed wholeheartedly.
Yeah. What about you, Calvin? What are things that you like about?
Well, as I mentioned before, really the cinematic nature that. That the system and the rules just really evoke, and that they encourage the players and the GM to use, really makes it Star Wars to me, where the other game, you know, the previous systems were very good systems. And, you know, Saga Edition was probably the best D20 system out there at the time. But it just didn't get all of that way.
I would say that's probably my favorite part of the new system as well. It feels like an action cinematic movie, even when you're reading through it. Like the mechanics really reinforce that play style. And I really like all the product support. I mean, it's not just books. There's apps, there's card packs, there are a variety of ways to get miniatures for this through some of their products like X-Wing or Armada or Imperial Assault. The beginner's boxes are gorgeous and a great way to just jump in for a pretty easy price. And
yeah, they did a really good job with the beginner's boxes, especially for groups of people who have not played before. I mean, I know that there's a lot of systems that are doing beginner's boxes now, and I think it's a fantastic thing for the industry.
Oh, yeah.
But really, they made it very easy for someone who has either never played or never run to just pick these up and go through them. And by the end of it, you've gotten the vast majority of the rules given to you at a little bit of a time, and lots of GMing tips through the adventure as to, you know, how to think about things, how to structure things for the players, and just really good job at introducing new players into role-playing.
And I will say, for the Edge of the Empire beginner box, the adventure and two of the pre-gen characters are available as free downloads on Fantasy Flight Games' website. And then there was also another free adventure that you can download as well, which I think came from their free RPG day a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to check out their website and see what's available for whether you want Age of Rebellion, Force of Destiny, or Edge of the Empire. They got a separate download section for each one of those games that you can check out and see what's available for that.
So let's talk. We talked about Calvin's favorite mechanic is the Destiny points.
Yeah.
And mine is the obligation and duty mechanic. Nick, what was your favorite mechanic coming out of the system?
I really like the interpreting of the die roll. I like crafting stories. I'm not always the greatest at it, but I like forcing myself to be more narrative in what's going on. And so the fact that there's a mechanical aspect that kind of forces me to do that, I really like. We talked last week about failing forward. And in this system, the fact that you can fail and still have positive aspects of it or something like that, it kind of alludes to that and in a defined mechanical way. And
okay.
I really like that part of it.
Very cool.
And I remember even as playing at the table, it was always kind of an edge of the seat moment whenever someone cast their die onto the table. Everyone kind of leaned forward. It's like, what happened? And then say, oh, you know, the failure outweighed the success. Oh, but look, you've got two advantages. What are you going to do? You know, that sort of thing. I really liked that.
Well, I got to say that while I'm not a big Star Wars fan, Calvin suggested that I look at age because I have a number of sci-fi settings that I really enjoy running games in. And I would agree with you that for Black Hearts, which is kind of our sci-fi mercenary game that we had played, Age of Rebellion would be a great fit if I ever bring that game back to the table. You know, much more so than the original GURPS game that we ran it in. But the system also ports well, I think, for any sort of sci-fi action cinematic adventure. People have talked about running, not just that it feels like Firefly, but actually running Firefly using the Edge of the Empire mm-hmm. rules. I think there's a lot of potential for this system in a variety of other settings.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I think any system that you would want players to be cinematic in, that's the feel of game that you would want to run, that this would be a system that you could port to that pretty easily.
Cool. Well, any final thoughts? No? Well, Calvin, thanks again for coming on.
Oh, you bet.
And thanks to Cameron and the folks at Petrie's Family Games. You can buy the Fantasy Flight Star Wars Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion books off their website at fantasyflightgames.com, at your friendly local game store, or order it directly from Cam at petriesgames.com.
Well, thanks to Cam and everybody at the Petrie's Family Games crew. You can check them out on petriesgames.com.
And if you ever find yourselves in the Colorado Springs area, be sure to look up Petrie's Family's Games.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.